And I gave you a set of notes. I thought that I had given you notes for this section last week. And my conscience helper, help me, completer, one flesh person reminded me that there were no notes. And so I gave you notes that would kind of catch you up to where we are. And then let us move into the rest of our section here on gentle, being gentle with one another. So Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2, we're in this passage, and this is the second of, no, it's the first of four safeguards. It's four safeguarding one another's that will help us in our relationships personally and in our relationships as a body. And so these things safeguard us against bitterness, against strife, against schism within the body. And so we ought to strive to do that. And we know that because Paul implies in the following verses that there is the possibility for something to get in the way of our unity. We're human. Those things are going to happen. And so conflict will arise, and it can cause unity to be destroyed. So when we walk into the assembly, we should be so full of the love of Christ that our humility, gentleness, and patience and forbearance create an atmosphere of oneness and tranquility. When we carry pride, anger, impatience, and intolerance into the assembly, we're destroying the new commandment of Christ to love one another. We don't want to create an environment like that. We need to be in the Spirit. We need to be in the Spirit of the love of Christ as we come together. And we need to remember that when we do that, whether it's here within the body or whether it's in our homes or in a work atmosphere, when we do that, we are destroying, especially in the church body, the relationships that Christ died to provide. We're destroying that union. And Easter is a wonderful time for us to celebrate the resurrection of Christ. Why? Because what Christ did was to provide for us to have that union that was destroyed by Adam. We couldn't walk, once Adam sinned, they couldn't walk with God and fellowship with God the way they did. That relationship with man was destroyed. That ability to have that union with God. And so Christ died to reconcile us to God. And so our gentleness is an aspect of safeguarding the joy of that union. And so we ought to be, as the scripture tells us, meek, the idea of gentleness. And we looked at that in Matthew chapter 11, verse 29, when Jesus said, "I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest to your souls." So we find this in one of very few, if not the only place that Jesus speaks to his own character. And we find that he describes himself as meek. And so I think we ought to pay attention to that. Gentleness, we learn, does not present itself as a holier than thou, but rather communicates a mild or in a mild spirit, having an awareness of its own shortcomings. How do we view others? How do we, when we especially feel the air of conflict arising, how do we handle that? What's going on in our heart and our mind and our thinking? Is there a spirit of gentleness within us, a spirit of Christ within us, a mildness about us, or are we allowing our anger to flare? And so We saw that Plato defined the word as the opposite of fierceness, cruelty, or anger. Proverbs 13 and verse 12 says, hope deferred, dashed expectations literally, maketh the heart sick. Those dashed expectations can drive anger. Many times what will happen is we have expectations. They may be good expectations. They may be expectations that are not good or not right. But we allow our expectations to rise to a level that they should not be. And when they're dashed, that disappointment comes. It begins to stir in our heart. And we allow anger to take its root. And then we lose our gentle spirit. We lose that mildness about us. So gentleness has to do with controlling one's temper. Is our temper under control? James said, for whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lust? And those are desires, whether good or bad, that war in your members. What's going on with these people James is speaking to? There is some conflict among them. Where is it coming from? It's coming from their expectations, their desires that they are placing over one another. And because of that, they're in conflict. Their anger is stirring. They are having wars and fightings. And James understood that a little bit of gentleness could have prevented a big problem. And so this gentleness comes by God's grace, right? Not all desires are sinful or bad, and sometimes they're good and natural. And we can have that anger stir, and we can lose that gentleness. All I want is for my husband to talk to me. That's a good desire. But where are we allowing that desire to rise? What level are we allowing that desire to rise to? Is it becoming an idol? Is it becoming something that is so overtaking our thinking and our drive about us that it's actually creating a chink? It's actually creating a wedge between you and the person you're in a relationship with. You know, all I want is for my kids to obey me. All I want is for my wife to speak to me with respect. All I want is my boss to take my ideas seriously. All I want is for my parents to listen to me. All I want is to just be noticed. Those are all good things. But if we want that good thing so much that we sin in order to get it, because you don't get it, your desire for what, or because you don't get it, your desire for whatever it is sinful or at least inordinate, and sin is lying at the door. Sinful anger is God's built-in smoke alarm to let us know that we are coveting something to the point of idolatry. And so watch our anger. What makes us angry? It was amazing to read the story of Jonah. What made Jonah angry? The gospel made Jonah angry. Something's wrong, right? I mean, for Jonah to get upset that the people of Nineveh repented, something's wrong. The spirit of gentleness is not there. For Jonah to get mad over a gourd, a leaf that covered him, something is wrong. And so our anger can be a smoke alarm for us to say, hey, I need to look inside my heart, my attitude. What's going on here? Because it's bringing me to a place where I'm not in a spirit of gentleness. I am in a spirit of anger. I'm in a place where things are not good. And both types of anger, whether it's the anger that is bottled up inside, or it's the anger that explodes in wrath, both of them are damaging. Both of them do not just affect me. And so many times we think that. We think, well, I'm just keeping my anger inside. Well, that's not just affecting you. It's affecting everyone around you. You may not be exploding like the pressure cooker explodes and sending shrapnel and glass all over the place. But that anger welled up inside at some point is going to come out. And even in your attitudes, in your conversation, in your words, it's going to come out and it's going to be seen. And so what does this look like practically lived? And that's where we left off in our notes. And so the first one is gentleness is the mildness of spirit that does not allow any desire to become so deep-rooted that it produces anger, either in an attempt to get it or as a result of not being able to get it. So covetousness produces idolatry. Idolatry can be evidenced by our anger. And we looked at that last week in chapter 5 there of Ephesians, just across the other page. In verse 5, for this ye know, that no whoremonger nor unclean person nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. And we've got that idolatry there paired with covetousness. And so that gentleness, that mildness of spirit is necessary to stave off that covetousness that kind of stirs that anger. It stirs within us. It creates those desires, or we allow those desires to elevate to a place that they should not be. The second one there, gentleness is the spiritual calmness and composure that keeps us from sinful anger and directs righteous anger toward the problem that is producing the anger. Think about that. When we learn to communicate, one of the things that I talk with married couples, I talk with couples who are coming in and they're dealing with conflict, we go over the four rules of communication. And one thing that we talk about is that there are times where anger is okay. There is righteous anger. There is anger that is focused in a right direction, but we can focus our anger in a wrong direction. And many times what will happen when we find ourselves in a place of conflict, rather than focusing the anger at the problem, we focus the anger at the person. You say, well, you don't understand. My husband is the problem. No, he's the person. And there's a sin problem there. There's a heart issue there. Or there's an action that stemmed out of the heart. And so the anger needs to be aimed at fixing the issue. Not at each other. Not at people. If you're going to get mad about something, And the best way to learn to forgive people, don't get mad if somebody gossips or at somebody because they gossiped about you. Get mad at the gossip. Get angry at the sin. Why? Because that's what's breaking the relationship. And when you're angry about the sin and you can focus your anger on the sin, guess what? You can love the person and you can forgive and you can confront in a biblical fashion. But if you're angry at the person, if you don't have that spirit of gentleness about you, that composure that keeps you from sinful anger or sinful directing of your anger, you're not going to fix the issue. Now, let's look at a few passages here. Look at Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 11. Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 11. We see here that a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. Now, it's not saying the wise man holds his anger in, but what it is saying is that a fool can't control his anger, can't keep control of his tongue. All right? So that means when we're in a place that we have a situation happen, maybe somebody says something, maybe something happens, maybe one of the kids do something that they just shouldn't have done. Where is your anger? Where is it directed? All right? We've got to be careful about just letting that anger flare. We can say things in a moment that hurt relationships for weeks, months, years. And that spirit of gentleness is so important. Why? Because the fool uttereth all his mind. A wise man keeps it in till afterwards. You ever found yourself in a place where maybe somebody began to tell you something that they did or confess something, or maybe they even may have even began to say something to you that was confrontational, and your anger flared and you began to speak before you listened to everything that was said? You ever been in a place like that? Especially when that anger flares before everything is said, and you then realize, I just opened my mouth and made a mess, and if I had just sat and listened, it wouldn't have been that bad. Fool uttereth all his mind. The wise man has that gentleness of spirit, and he keepeth it in till afterwards. Go back. I should have told you to keep your finger in Ephesians, but go back to Ephesians chapter 4. Because the end part of this chapter is dealing so much with these heart attitudes, these aspects of our character. But Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26, we see the verse says, "Be ye angry and sin not." That is an imperative. It doesn't mean try not to slip up. It means this: when you get angry, you shouldn't be sinfully angry. When you get angry because you're in a discussion with your spouse, that anger shouldn't turn toward them. There shouldn't be name calling. There shouldn't be blame or blame shifting. There shouldn't be a pointing of fingers. What are we turning to when we do that? We're turning to sinful anger. What did Jesus do when he got angry in the temple? He dealt with the problem. All right? He went after the problem. And so, again, when we are angry, the imperative is that we do not sin. Look at verse 31. Let all bitterness, and here are anger words, and wrath, and anger, and clamor, and evil speaking, be put away from you with all malice. That is a command. It is an imperative. So do not sin in your anger. Put it away from you. That's what we ought to be doing. That is the spirit of gentleness. You say, well, I've got an anger problem and I just can't help it. Well, then you probably need to make a conscientious effort and set a conscientious process in place when you feel that anger coming. You know what it feels like. I know what it feels like when I get angry inside. And we need to teach ourselves, as Isaiah tells us, to do right. And so it may be that you've got to set something in place where you have an anger issue and you need to step away. Now, that does not mean that you're in the middle of a discussion with someone and you walk out the door and you don't come back for 3 hours and then give them the silent treatment for another three. That's sinful anger. All right? But you may need to separate. You may need to just step back and cool off for a few minutes and refocus your mind and your thoughts and come back in a spirit of gentleness. All right? Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 14 says, "But strong meat belongeth to them that are full of age." And I want you to notice this phrase, "even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised." What does that mean? What's that talking about? Well, we find a little bit more explanation as the phrase goes on, to discern both good and evil. All right, what is going on in our heart and mind? when it comes to conflict, when it comes to a disagreement, do we have our senses exercised? Do we know ourselves? Do we know where our heart bents are? When it comes to conflict, when it comes to anger, what are your buttons? All right? Knowing your buttons is very important. I'm going to forget her name. Doesn't matter what her name is. She was 4 years old when she came to us in school. And she was probably one of the brightest, most insightful four-year-olds I have ever met. And her teacher, I can't tell you how many days I would stand outside her teacher's door with her teacher in tears and in anger, because this little girl was PhD level expert in finding your buttons and pushing them. And she found every one of her K-4 teacher's buttons. And it was her sheer delight from morning until noon to come in and just... And her poor teacher drove her nuts. And so I had to help a four-year-old, and I had to help a K-4 teacher. And she learned. But it was hard because she had to acknowledge what her buttons were. She had to look beyond herself. She had to exercise her senses so that she could discern good and evil. Why? Because when she didn't have her senses exercised, her anger could get the better of her. And that's when you have an outburst in the classroom. And you have a K-4 teacher who's just as out of control as a K-4 student. And the student is loving every minute of it. We need to have our senses exercised. Know your buttons. Know how to step away. That's what a mature person, that's what these verses are about. You see the beginning, but strong meat belongeth to them that are of what? Full age. So gentleness, there's that spiritual calmness and composure. That's a mature thing. Number three, I believe it is, gentleness, and keep your finger in Ephesians, but and we're going to go to Proverbs again, but gentleness is exercising wise thinking while being provoked. It's exercising wise thinking while being provoked. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 28. It says, the heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. It's a wise thinking by being provoked. Exercising wise thinking while being provoked. The wise man has learned to think even in provocation. Have you ever watched? I love watching the some of the military documentaries on boot camp. You know, when you've got recruits going in, and I watched a season of Navy SEAL training, and some of the things that those guys go through. You know, when they've got them out in the surf and they're laying in the sand, and the waves are coming up and rolling over them, and they're lifting logs up and down together as a team, and they're trying. What are they doing? They're teaching them a composure, in a situation where it is very difficult. It's a provoking type of situation. It's provoking their emotions. It may be provoking their anger because maybe somebody on the team is not doing as well, or they think they're not putting forth as much effort. What are they doing? They're teaching them to focus their thoughts. And so as we find ourselves in a place of provocation, are we focusing our thoughts in a right direction? Let's look at the use of this. Look at chapter or verse 1 in chapter 15. A soft answer turneth away what? Wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. The wise man knows the soft answer. He's got his mind focused. Look at verse 2. The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. You see this theme here in Proverbs chapter 15? Look at verse 4. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. Verse 7. The lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the foolish doeth not so. Verse 14, the heart of him that hath understanding seeketh knowledge, but the mouth of fools feedeth on foolishness. Verse 18, a wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. Verse 23, a man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. Listen, you got a problem with anger and letting your words out. Go to Proverbs chapter 15. I mean, here are like 8 or 9 verses that you can memorize and keep in your heart and mind. Gentleness is exercising wise thinking while being provoked. Number 4, gentleness is keeping quiet when angry in order to consider an appropriate response. All right? It's keeping quiet when angry in order to keep an appropriate response. What is James's entreaty? Quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. We're still in Proverbs. Look at Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 19. Look at what the Bible has to say here. In the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Are we quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath? Look at chapter 14, chapter 14 and verse 29. It says, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly. Are we listening? Are we saying, I'm not going to allow my temper to get to the place that my wrath is pouring out? Am I going to get all the facts? Or am I going to let it come out? Look at chapter 17 and verse 14. Chapter 17 and verse 14. The beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. Therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. Again, the idea is once that water starts flowing, the picture is of water that is stopped up by something. But boy, once that water starts to flow, you're not going to stop it. And it's the same way with our words. It's the same way when we let that anger out. And so having that quietness when angry in order to consider an appropriate response. Look at chapter 19, verse 11. 19 and verse 11. The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. Back to 17 and verse 27 and 28. He that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Now notice this, even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise, and he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. Pastor, I got an anger problem. I just want to let it out. Close your mouth. Even a fool is seen as a wise man if he can keep his mouth closed. All right? And you won't stay a fool very long if you keep your mouth closed. Why? Because you begin to hear all the details. All right? A gentle person slows down when he becomes angry in order to be certain that his brain is engaged before he opens his mouth. And he realizes that until he gains composure, it will hurt his argument and accelerate the conflict should he open his mouth. All right? So furthering that definition, the Bible has a lot to say about our choice of words. Gentleness is knowing how to rule not only your thoughts, but also your words, tone, countenance, and body language during times of provocation. Gentleness is knowing how to rule not only your thoughts, but also your words, tone, and countenance, and body language during times of provocation. Yeah, there we go. I had a slide advanced too far. Now you can see that. What does the Bible say? We're still in Proverbs, which is a wonderful thing. And so the Bible, again, has a lot to say about our choice of words. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 24 says this, "Pleasant words are as honey, as an honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones." Are our words right? I mean, first and foremost, if we're going to communicate, we got to choose the right words. Okay? Words can be incendiary. I do not believe in the children's phrase that they would say on the playground, "Sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never harm me." That is not true. Words hurt. Words stir strife. And so choosing the right words is important, but it needs to go beyond that. Can I advance that? Everybody get your blanks filled in? All right. So choosing the right words, that's one aspect of communication. But also, we should not just choose the right words, but say them in the right tone. Look at verse 21 in Proverbs 16. "The wise in heart shall be called prudent." Notice this. "And the sweetness of the lips increaseth learning." We need to have the right tone. "Hey, did you look at that report I put on your desk?" "Yes, of course." Right words? Sure. What did my tone communicate? Didn't communicate the right way, did it? "Hey, did you look at that report I put on your desk?" "Yeah, of course I did." Whole different tone. And so the tone is important. "Honey, did you take out the garbage?" "Yes, dear." What did that communicate? It's the right thing to say. I mean, you were even nice. You chose a wonderful word for your wife, right? "Dear." Or maybe she says, "Honey, did you take out the garbage?" Again, she chose a nice word, right? Honey's a sweet thing. It's wonderful to be called that. Tone is important. All right? That's a second aspect of our communication. But the third is this, and that is our body language should match our words and tone. Look at verse 12 of Proverbs chapter 6. All right, Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 12. "A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth." Now notice verse 13. I always loved this. This was a great verse for high school chapel. and junior high chapel. He winketh with his eyes. He speaketh with his feet. He teacheth with his fingers. You know what that's talking about? It's talking about our body language. What we do. Son, did you clean your room? Yes, Mom. My body language, right? Hey, we need to talk about this. What's my body language saying? I don't want to talk, do I? Right? And so our body language is important. Again, this it all comes back to the spirit of gentleness and knowing how to rule our thoughts, our words, our tone, our countenance, and our body language. Gentleness, I want to finish this so that we don't have to touch it next week. Gentleness holds bitterness at bay. Now think about this. It quickly forgives an offender, thus not allowing yourself to meditate and muse over the provocation. And we're going to deal with forgiveness at a later point. But Ephesians 4:32, we know it well. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted what? Forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Gentleness holds bitterness at bay because it quickly forgives. How is that produced? It's produced by being in the yoke with Christ and by loving as he loved, by letting his strength bear the load. And I'm going to move right back as we think about the next one another. Consider Jesus concerning this character quality. He was meek or gentle. Jesus spoke of himself in many ways. Think about it. The bread of life, the light of the world, the door, the good shepherd, the resurrection and the life, the way, the truth and the life, the vine, the Alpha and Omega, the first and the last, and the beginning and the end. But it's very rare that we see him speak of his character. And so Matthew 11:29 may be one of the few, if not the only place that we see him speak of it. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. And that's one of those four character qualities in Ephesians 4:2. And ye shall find rest to your souls. I think it would do us well to meditate on the thought that possibly the only time Jesus refers to his character, one of those qualities is gentleness. And so may the love of Christ constrain our hearts and minds to a gentleness of spirit that reflects Jesus in all of our interactions. So we may we be people of gentleness. And in so doing, we reflect Christ. Let's stand and we'll sing this and we'll make this a prayer as we just meditate on what we've heard. But let's sing I Need Thee Every Hour. We'll join on three verses. And as we stand together and then we'll part up and we'll take about 15 minutes tonight to pray together. And when we hear the music, we'll know that prayer time's at an end. Let's